everybody, to Radio Free Nintendo episode 146. I'm your intrepid host, Jonathan Metz, and with me today, as always, we have John Lindemann.
Hello.
James Jones.
Good afternoon.
And Greg Lay.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
Ruined it!
Yeah.
Well, you expected something
more from
me? You
broke the train, man. All right. So we're going to have a brisk show for you today.
Brisket.
We're going to cover a bit of new business, but it's kind of dry for a couple of us this week. And then we have the April NPD results and a bit of discussion on that craziness. and then it has been 1 year since WiiWare debuted in North America. So we're going to talk about WiiWare service and what, you know, our favorite games for it. And, oh yeah, before we jump into new business, the latest poll for Retroactive number 6 NES edition just wrapped up, and it ended in a tie between, these are all NES games, we had Wrecking Crew, Zelda 2, Adventure of Link, Star Tropics, River City Ransom, and Mega Man 3, and it ended up in a tie between Zelda 2 and Star Tropics, and James has the tie-breaking vote because he didn't vote in the poll yet.
I can't take this kind of pressure.
I mean, we don't know what he's going to choose. We're doing this quasi-live on the air.
Man.
So, James, break it to us. Which one is it, man?
Well, James, it is your destiny.
Oh, well, that's just depressing to think about.
Remember, the ice cold battle disaster or not two of the games.
Well, I guess I have to go for the next best thing, which is Zelda 2.
Okay,
ooh, there it is.
John is unhappy.
I don't know.
John's like the guy in Last Crusade. He chose poorly.
I don't have anything against that game, but I mean, I guess I've just played it one time too many, and I don't think it's worthy of.
I've never
multiple
played
repeated
it, and that was really the deciding factor. I've never
okay.
played this game.
I believe your words 20 minutes ago were, quote, Zelda 2 can eat a dick.
Well, you know, I kind of said, you know, I liked your style when you said that, you know, Super Ghouls and Ghosts can fuck itself. You know, I like the candor, and I like...
Are we gonna have to continually one-up ourselves over the decisions made?
I appreciate that.
Contra can go fucking go die. Everybody fucking involved. This goddamn game should be shot and killed.
It can fuck off and die.
There's nothing to say about the old Contra games. That those will not be coming up. I'm sorry. So anyway, the next Retroactive game, as we just learned, will be Zelda 2 Adventure of Link. Of course, it's available on Virtual Console. And as NES games go, it's a pretty big one. So I would recommend that you jump in there. And actually, next week we'll be doing our E3 predictions kind of pre-show because that's the last time before E3 that John will be able to record with us. Mm-hmm. So the week after that, which is actually immediately before E3, literally it'll come out just a couple days before the show begins. So that episode will be the first part of our Zelda 2 Retroactive. So you got 2 weeks to download it, make some progress, formulate your thoughts, put them in the thread. So yeah, if you're playing along with this, go to the forums and find the thread for that.
I can't wait for John's
and
thoughts.
I have a feeling this game will spring some, you know, some pretty interesting discussion, not just among us, but amongst all the listeners too.
I don't think most people really know much about this game. I think they'll be pretty stunned when they see it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because I think it's one of those black sheep games of the franchise that,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but it's also a Zelda game, and a lot of people have played it.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people have some pretty well-formed opinions on it. So anyway, we'll talk about all that in a couple weeks. I definitely hope a lot of people will participate. It's quite an interesting game, and if you're looking for pointers, I recommend The Wizard, starring Beau Bridges and Fred Savage. And Jenny Lewis, actually. Okay, so new business. John Lindemann is up first with new business.
Oh, all right. My new biz, well, okay, on the Nintendo front, actually this week I played some more Super Punch-Out. Nothing really too new, but I did play some Super Punch-Out, and I played some Super Mario Galaxy, which I know everybody in the forums loves the fact that I have never finished that game, but...
Are you trying to, like, beat the final boss?
I don't think
boss
he's beaten
or get
the final
all
boss.
The...
I don't think hell, man.
No, not even close to the 60 stars.
Oh, not even close. Like, we're talking, like, maybe 20
okay.
stars. I mean, I've barely even played it.
You barely started it.
Yeah, I barely even started it.
Jesus.
Yeah.
What do you mean, Jesus? See, I don't understand that reaction.
But, so what happened?
Do you know how many Mario games I've played in my lifetime, James? Seriously.
Three.
Tons.
He's saucy tonight. Mario games.
I am saucy tonight. Damn right. Because I get the same. The thing is, I get the same slack from everybody when I tell them that I haven't, you know, played through that game five times over.
But it's not that. I mean, I only played the game once, and I was like, okay, I'm done with it. But
that's exactly my point.
And but I would have the same reaction.
Because I know that I would have the same reaction if I played through it.
Come on, let's be fair. If we're talking about pure repetition, Mario Sunshine came out in 2002. It took 5.5 years for them to get to Galaxy.
Get that logic out of here.
You know, first-person shooters that come out every other month, you are quite happy to play through. I mean, doesn't that say it's more about what you like about the genre rather than the repetitiousness of it?
No, I'm not. That's the thing. I'm not really disparaging the game. I think it's actually an excellent game. But I mean, my beef has always been all the way through with this. Whenever I've, you know, kind of criticized the game, is that when I play it, I feel like it's not that much different than when I was playing Super Mario 64 way back when. Like, I don't feel like the gameplay has really changed that much. I feel like
point, though. I mean, you know, you've got games coming out every other month where the gameplay doesn't change all that much, and yet, when you're taking 5-year gaps,
it's just expectations. Maybe John just expects more out of
Well, let me put it this way. You brought up how, and other people have brought up as well, how, you know, I can play, you know, first-person shooters, which are supposedly so generic, but if you look at that genre, they've actually done, I mean, it's not like I'm playing a version of Doom over again. It's like, the thing is, all of the first-person shooters now, they all have stuff like kind of RPG elements in their online play. They have, like, massively multiplayer online play, stuff like that. So if you look back to the state of first-person shooters,
if you're talking about over a period of 10 years, obviously they've been through a lot of changes, or 15 years, or everything, but the point is from game to game,
I'm saying the Mario series, that game is pretty much...
If you can enjoy one first-person shooter or another genre from one month to the next month, if you can enjoy that, then is it so...
I see what John's saying, but what he's saying is that Mario Galaxy isn't that much different than Mario 64, which is 13 years old.
I would say there are very significant differences.
You know,
though,
Call of Duty 4 is completely different than any first-person shooter that came out in 1996.
Yeah, but in terms of enjoying...
It's not a matter of the number of games that have come out.
But in terms of enjoying something that, you know, you've done so many times... Well, first of all, you haven't done Mario that many times before because there's been two previous 3D games.
Yeah, but then I got my fill because those games haven't changed. I mean, I just don't think it's evolved as much as you're saying it has.
The biggest evolution with Mario Galaxy is the fact that it's much like Mario 64 is almost a bit of a sandbox game in some ways. Mario Galaxy moves quite far away from that. Much more linear, much more traditional level design structures. Yeah, there are some that are more that way, like the sort of Honeybee Galaxy and stuff like that, but they're more infrequent, and even they are
by
more
far
broken.
My least favorite part.
Yeah,
of that
they
game
are
the
not the.
Mo-
that's
stages.
The thing. I mean, the most successful parts are the most broken up parts, and they are the bits that are the most different. You know, and that's probably got something to do with it.
To move away from this trite argument, I will say that, John, I hope that you'll continue to play it, because I really think Galaxy gets better the more you get into it.
Okay, and I'm willing to experience
that. I think what
that.
You'll find is that maybe the base gameplay hasn't changed that much since 64. I will concede that. Mm-hmm. But I think the level designs get more and more imaginative as you go, and every new world that you go to in Galaxy gives you something to do that you haven't really done before.
Okay.
And it's mostly really good stuff. I mean, it's usually pretty
exciting.
Yeah,
I mean, the point I would make, for instance, with the level design is that it gives you a tremendous variety of things to do just within this game, which most games, however innovative...
Well, much more than Sunshine,
certainly much more than Sunshine, but however innovative a given game may be, once you get into it, for the next 15 hours, however long it may last, it may actually be quite monotone. And just,
The Blob.
So it kind of loses its freshness.
No, that's monochrome.
It kind of loses its freshness
monochrome.
Quite quickly. But, you know, with Galaxy, you've got this tremendous... You know, I can't think of many games that have the sheer kind of breadth of tasks to do. They're just completely different. You know, because of the structure of the game, they could just... the premise, they could pretty much do whatever the hell they like, and they went in, many different directions, and that's what makes it, you know, for me, very much more entertaining than Sunshine, probably, because that was relatively much more one note.
Yeah.
Well, what we should be doing is congratulating John for giving it another chance and trying to get back into it.
Other stuff I played. I picked up Dead Space this week, and it is excellent. I would highly recommend it to anybody that... I would recommend it actually more to kind of Metroid fans than Resident Evil fans, even though it does kind of... It cribs a lot from, like, Resident Evil, Metroid, BioShock, all those kinds of games. But it's really kind of like a melting pot of those games, but it takes a lot of the elements that are originally found in those games and makes them better, I think. There's a lot of things like the way that, like in Metroid, one of the things that, you know, I really didn't realize until playing Dead Space was the way that, you know, having to press start and actually go into your inventory and kind of do stuff and manipulate that kind of stuff kind of takes you out of the experience. But in Dead Space, the way you manage your inventory is you kind of, you know, it's the same thing, like you press start to get into it, but instead of taking you completely out of the game and taking you to a different menu, it actually just pops up a hologram in front of you.
Okay, John, I hate to be an ass, but in what Metroid game do you push start to go to an inventory?
Well, I mean, just what I'm talking about is, I mean, maybe it's not start, whatever, but I'm talking about how...
In Resident Evil, you do.
I mean, you do have to... The thing is, you have to bring up, like, your... like at least like the map screen is probably what I'm talking about.
Not
really so much inventory, but the map screen, because in Dead Space, everything is integrated. Like the map screen is presented that way. Your inventory, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's all presented that way. So in that way, I think it's definitely kind of, I wouldn't say it. I mean, it's not like a huge step forward, but it's something where you don't realize until you see that change. You're like, wow, that actually is a lot much more effective way to kind of, you know, deal with your inventory and stuff like that.
The funny thing about Dead Space is, like, there is a map screen, but I don't even know if I ever used it. I mean, like, there's a button you press and it, you know, it pretty much takes you to a different screen where you look at the map, but it's like, you probably would never use it because you can always just kind of click the trigger and it points the laser in the direction you need to go. So, like, I got really dependent on that, you know, that direction thing.
Yeah, I was actually surprised they did that, because they actually map out where you have to go next. Like, there's a little line showing you exactly where you need to go, and I was kind of like, doesn't that sort of defeat the purpose, like, in terms of trying to make the game kind of exploratory, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to use it, but if it's there, you probably will.
Yeah.
Kind of like the hint system in Metroid Prime.
Now, some of the things, I mean, it kind of has some of the cons that sort of plague the genre, like, you know, a lot of the enemies look the same and stuff like that. But overall, it's really good sound, really good light effects as well. I mean, it's not like some games where it just seems like the devs just said, okay, well, I made up this cool light effect, so I'm going to have this lamp swinging back and forth in a darkened room just so I can show off my light effect. There's no like gratuitous stuff like that. It's all very well done. And, you know, there's no lens flares for the sake of lens flares. So I would highly recommend it.
Does playing Dead Space on your PS3 make you excited for a guided first-person light gun adventure on your Wii?
What, you mean Extraction?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be interesting. I don't know. I'm interested to see what they do with it, because, I mean, it actually has, you know, a pretty cool plot. I mean, like, you're kind of through the whole thing, you're talking with these two other characters, and one of them is like your captain, the captain of the ship you crash on, and the other one is like this girl who's like a doctor, and the captain is very like, we're going to get through this, and the girl's like, you're going to get us killed, and so that kind of gets grating after a while, because it's just very overdone. But I'm more interested to see kind of what they do with the story, and if they flesh out the rest of the story, because it's pretty cool.
Okay. Well, I have Greg up next with some Rhythm Heaven.
Yeah, as promised, I picked this up, and I've been playing quite a lot. I've got through, basically got to the part of the game where you start repeating the concepts you've had before, the songs and the sort of the game concepts, but just harder. And then you get new remixes and stuff. So you've pretty much seen almost all of what the game's got to offer. And it is, if for those who've played the GBA original that only came out in Japan, it's very much just an adaptation of that to the DS. You know, they don't really try and sort of change anything fundamental or anything. It's very much just straight up sort of follow up. But they decided to use the touchscreen for the inputs. So there's like tapping as you might expect, first of all, then you've got the flicking, which is kind of the most problematic element, because there is a certain kind of technique to making sure your flick gets registered consistently, which is obviously essential for something that is, you know, so purely timing based. And that's kind of, you know, interferes with the purity of the kind of rhythm gameplay a little bit. And I'm sure they've probably had to put a little more wiggle room with the recognition to in terms of like how accurate you have to be to get a beat right, to make that work. But all in all, it does work. So I mean, you could have just done it with buttons again on DS, but yeah, I think they wanted to, you know, make it sort of more associated with the DS hardware, and commercially that's worked in Japan, that's for sure. But in terms of the overall game, the music is, you know, pretty close. I'm not sure. It's tough to say because I played the original for months. So, you know, those things grow on you over time. Whereas, you know, having only played for a couple of weeks, that's not going to happen in the same way, is it? But so I'm not sure whether it's quite as infectious, but it's very similar, very charming.
So I actually just procured it this afternoon before I went on a marathon furniture assembly session.
Right.
So I've only played the first few minutes, but so far it seems, you know, pretty much the same game I played, what, 4 years ago now?
No, not quite. It's just under three.
Just under three? So
yeah, 2006 is when it came out.
Does that start to change? Because, I mean, I've only played for maybe, you know...
No, it's very... I mean, look, it's fundamentally the same game as I mean, in many ways it was kind of, you know, bringing that game, which sold pretty well for a GBA game, which, you know, when the GBA had kind of already had its day.
Without a brand, no less. I mean, it was a new franchise.
And, yeah, new IP, too, as well. So, yeah, it sold pretty well, considering that, but clearly they saw the potential to bring it to the wider market of the DS, and so they didn't risk changing very much. So if you're happy, if you've played the original, you're happy to have more of the same, then you're good, and I would fall into that camp.
Fantastic.
But just to be clear, it is a sequel, not a remake.
No. The music's all new. The concepts, okay. The games are all new. But they are. You know, there's only so much you can do.
It's incremental versus.
Yeah,
it is. Okay, that's fine. I wasn't totally clear.
Yeah. No, I mean, the fundamentals of the gameplay are precisely the same. The only difference is how you do the inputs, which is now with the touchscreen as opposed to with the D-pad and the face buttons as it was with
the GBA. How does that work? Because, I mean, the first few are so simple, it's not even really...
Like I said, it works in the end, and certainly, you know, when you get towards the end, you know, where I am in the game, you know, they do get really quite demanding, but you don't feel like the touchscreen is holding you back. Once you kind of get acclimated, but there is more of an acclimation than there is with just D-pad and buttons. You know, that's so immediate, and that obviously it's not quite the same.
Yeah, that was what my concern is. Because, I mean, just my personal feeling is that first game could never be ported to motion controls. It just couldn't.
Yeah, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if they just finessed it a little bit, made it, you know, not quite as precisely demanding. I would tend to agree with that. But in terms of the difficulty, I didn't find it too difficult because I played the first one to death, and even though this has different input mechanisms, you kind of understand how these things work.
Right.
I think if you're someone that's coming to it fresh, like every level has a tutorial. Right. And you really need that to sort of understand what it's asking of you before you actually then have to simply execute what it's asking of you. So for me, those bits were quite, you know, quick. I think for a new player, it could be quite hard. A lot of people have said that. And I think one of the mistakes that they've made is that you still are, if you are stuck on a particular game, there's nothing else you can really do.
You can't get around them, right?
No, you have to beat that particular game to progress, which I think is a bit, you know, because they could have done what, for instance, what World of Goo has, which is like a sort of skip option, but you only have so many of them, for instance. Or they could have said, like, you have these different sets of games which lead up to a remix. They could have said, well, rather than locking one set at a time, you could unlock two. So at least you could, like, okay, well, I'm not getting along on that path. Let's try the other path for a bit or something.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of these minigame type deals where you have to play them one at, you know, Retro Game Challenge had the same problem where there's just, you know, you have to complete these certain challenges or you cannot progress. And
see, I don't think that it was ever really a huge issue in the original game for me. There was maybe one or two.
Yeah.
I can't remember explicitly which one it was. I think it was one of the dancing ones that it just drove me completely insane. And that, you know, I spent 2 days trying to crack it. But besides,
I mean, you know, like I said, it's one of these things where it hasn't particularly affected me, but I can see,
right.
It just seems to me to be a mistake that should be in there. It's not, you know, it's a pretty simple sort of thing to implement. I don't really think there's much excuse for that. Another thing there's no excuse for is not having a restart option.
Oh, God.
They still haven't got a restart option. Because you might get into a...
I didn't even notice,
You might even get into a... You know, you might get into one of these mini, you know, these songs, and you'll start to fail. You'll start to fail, but it doesn't just, like, fail you out straight away. If you let it, it will just keep going to the end.
You have a certain quotient of failing, but it's not going to kill you.
At the end. But obviously, you know it's all going wrong, so you're like, all right, let's start again. But when you press quit, it actually takes you back out to the menu rather than just restarting the song, which means you have to skip through the tutorial again.
Fantastic.
And I mean, it's just simple stuff that you really, you know, surely you can, you know, see the why people would want to have just a simple retry function.
Yeah.
It's kind of bizarre, but these are minor issues. Ultimately, I like the first game a lot. I think that where it really comes together is in the remix stages, because that's where the more WarioWare character of the game comes in. So, you know, the other parts kind of introduce you to these individual songs that introduce you to a concept. And then what the remix will do is it'll be a single piece of music, but it's taking bits from all those previous songs together. So it's got that kind of schizophrenic WarioWare feel of like jumping from one thing to the next, and, you know, it makes it feel a bit more frenetic and a bit more kind of crazy. And those are the bits that really shine. And there are more of them now.
Because before
there were 5 component songs leading up to a remix. Now there are only 4. So that, but there's the same number of levels, which means the remixes are a greater contingent of them.
Yeah, because that was always... The remix is always kind of cool because... just how they tied those games together, and sometimes they would even tie the image of those games together.
There was some fun kind of thematic stuff going, and it's similar, like they'll have thematic sort of things, like I think one of the remixes is sort of like a tropical kind of sound, so like all the games get a kind of tropical makeover, which includes sort of Moai heads with silly glasses on, and, you know...
That's right, you know, it's tropical.
That's what I think of, course.
Well, obviously, the Moai heads come from earlier, but then they stick the silly glasses on to make them tropical.
When I think of tropical culture, I think of a society that may have hastened its own extermination by building giant sculptures.
So it has got the quirkiness going on that, you know, you'd like to see from this, I guess the final thing I'd like to say about it really is just that the localization, obviously that means that you now have sort of English lyrics in a handful of songs, and a few of them are just really bland and uninspired, and they may well be in Japanese, but it wouldn't be as apparent to you. So it might actually just be better that way.
Yeah.
Although I think there's one with the frogs, which is this sort of 50s style song
that works
in English. That does. But apart from that, not so much.
Well, you know, it was funny because there were some English lyrics in the original game, but they were an English that you and I would never understand.
I
have no idea why they would change them to English, just because it just works so well with kind of like the quirky theme of that game. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, you probably know? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it doesn't really matter that you don't understand. Like with the original, it didn't matter to me. I couldn't understand the lyrics.
It's also
inscrutable and bizarre. Like it does fit in with it perfectly well, but they felt the need to do it. And like I said, maybe with the frogs one, it actually works, but with the other ones, the lyrics are just like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Love.
Sing us some more, Greg.
It doesn't really do it for me at all. All right, well, the next thing I'm going to get on to is something I couldn't possibly have predicted I'd be talking about this week, because it didn't, as far as I was aware, exist yet, like when we last recorded. This is Contra Rebirth, a WiiWare game that came out for the Japanese service that was first revealed like just after we recorded last week.
Yeah, like an hour and a half later.
It was shortly afterwards, and so I've downloaded it, played it, I'm up to what very likely appears to be the final boss. And, you know, I think it delivers what you'd want from this sort of thing. It's kind of a stripped down, it's a bit of a stripped down Contra in the sense that there's fewer power ups. You've just got the spread, the laser, and the homing missiles. Like, so some of the other ones have been taken out. You haven't got the sort of crush bombs, you know, that destroy everything on the screen. And it's just the action levels. So they're all action. That's a silly thing to say. It's just the side-scrolling levels.
None of the overhead or isometric.
No overhead, no 3D, nothing like it. It's just, you know, the traditional levels, and that's good. Yeah, I think for this, you know, just because they always kind of felt like they were padding for time. To be honest.
Yeah.
You know, because they were slower paced, and it just felt like, you know, that was their way of trying to extend the experience without having to make even more crazy levels. Whereas with this, they don't so much care about padding for time because, you know, it's a WiiWare game.
It's a WiiWare game. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be long.
And it's got unlimited continues like Contra 3 had, and unlike Contra 4, which went back to the more sort of traditional limited continues. So you could be pretty liberal with it, and there's quite a...
So I might buy this.
I think it's more inviting than Contra 4 for a number of reasons. First of all, like, it doesn't matter how quickly you press the fire button in this one. Like, that is, like Contra 3, that's irrelevant. You just hold down and it fires as fast as it's going to fire. Whereas in Contra 4, yeah, it really did matter. I mean, the flamethrower was useless unless you mashed the hell out of that thing, because it fired very slowly otherwise. So, you know, it's a bit more inviting in that way. And in terms of the sort of bones of the game, the graphics they're nice, but they're quite a different style, actually. They're very much more comic book like. At times, they're kind of reminding me a bit of Zero Mission in that regard. So, less detailed, more colourful, but the animation is very much more fluid. I mean, you go back and look at Contra 3 now. His animation when he's running along the main character is a bit like...
I think it's 2 frames.
It's very two frames.
It's a bit 8-bit Castlevania or Circle of the Moon, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So this is very much more fluid. And
it's 4 frames.
Most things are animated very much more fluidly. It's pushing a lot of sprites and there's no slowdown. Now, you might think, well, big whoop, there's no slowdown. But apparently, Gradius Rebirth does have slowdown.
Indeed.
So I was worried. But, I mean, they are pushing some crazy stuff in parts of this game. You know, that even though sort of in still shots, it, you know, very much looks like a Super NES game, in motion, it's definitely got more going on.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
The sprite rotation, they're just using it for everything. It's just all over the place. And it's quite nicely done.
Now, do you think it's an all new engine? Because I was trying to figure out exactly what it was built off of. I could not tell.
No, it looks quite different from Contra 4.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming this is just, you know, pretty much purpose for this game specifically.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's bold. Its colors a bit more whimsical in feel.
It's actually running on the Gunstar Heroes engine.
I tell you what, the music, right? The music is like, sounds like the Genesis. That's the thing. It really does.
Yeah,
like, maybe
it
really
does.
Wow. Maybe a
so
little
maybe
bit of
is.
Fidelity.
Maybe it really is.
But it's funny how much it sounds like the, one of the levels has the actual piece of music from the first level of Contra 3, and it just sounds like, wow, they just put this through the Genesis instead.
Fantastic.
Well, maybe it's from the Genesis Contra. Was it that Contra Heroes or something?
Contra Hardcore, I think it was.
Oh, Hardcore.
I think it's just a case of how they chose to do the instrumentation with this, and it comes out sounding sort of Genesis-y, but it's fine. I mean, I prefer that. The Super Nintendo soundtrack was amazing. I absolutely loved it. It was very pretty, at times almost bold-facedly ripped off Predator, which is great. You know, that's fine with me. You know, the strong pounding beat and stuff for that. So this isn't quite as sort of cinematic, but you get the idea. It's pretty good. But in general, you know, I think they've pretty much got the right approach here. So strip it down to the action. You know, it's pretty simple, bit more inviting than the previous ones. And if you want a real challenge, you kick it up on hard, it goes crazy. There's stuff everywhere. And you know, so it should satisfy people, and it does have 2-player, as you would expect Contra to have, not online, but just local.
Greg, real quick, give us a Jesse Ventura quote from Predator.
Ain't got time to bleed.
You're bleeding.
Nice.
I ain't got time to bleed.
You got time to duck?
maybe we'll actually get Contra Rebirth soon in America. It'd be nice to download something for WiiWare.
Took a long time for Gradius. That was like months.
Ain't got time for localization.
You've got like some hand-drawn stills for story.
Translate the hand-drawn stills.
But yeah, with like two lines of text underneath. So yeah, localization.
Oh, that's 6 months right there.
Not a big issue.
Yeah, well, that's good. Okay, so I'm up next, and I don't really have a lot of new business. I basically played Da Blob all week. I just played it for like 45 minutes a day, which is about how long it takes to go through one chapter. And I beat it yesterday, sent it back to Gamefly. I don't know. I mean, it ends, you know, pretty much the last chapter is not really any different than the rest. Mm-hmm. The only sense of progression I got as I went through the game is that it just gets more frustrating towards the end. There's more platforming, more like you spend more time being the really fat blob as you like, you know, basically the enemies take more points to kill. And so, paint points. And so the levels provide you with more paint, which makes your blob fatter, which makes you move more slowly and makes it harder to jump up to ledges.
That's right, yeah.
So it basically feels like the controls get worse as you go through the game. I mean, that is effectively what happens. And, I mean, it didn't bother me enough to quit playing, but I was a couple times at the limit of, you know, on the verge of just turning it off and sending it back without finishing it. Because I was just like, do I really want to play Da Blob right now? I guess I will, you know. I'd kind of prefer to play ExciteBots, but then I'll feel guilty because I'm paying for the time to rent this game, this other game. So it was just like I was really on the tipping point a few times of just throwing it in the mail and getting rid of it. But in the end, I proceeded on and finished it, and I sound really negative about it, and I think I'm just trying to play devil's advocate a little bit, because I definitely enjoyed parts of it, and I enjoyed aspects of it, you know, people seem to get angry when I talk about this game, but I beat it, so there you go, I don't have to talk about it anymore. James, what did you do this week, man?
So I'm still, in an effort to get this review copy out in a timely manner, I've devoted my entire gaming time, with the exception of a short stint for Rhythm Heaven, to getting through Rune Factory Frontier, which takes...
It's very responsible.
...four fucking ever to do anything.
Yeah. Well, it's an RPG, sort of, or at least a simulation of farming.
It's a Harvest Moon game, and Harvest Moon games...
Yeah, they're long.
They're not meant to be played in a review format. They just aren't. They're meant to be played casually. You know, they're time sinks. You know, okay, I'll sit down for an hour and play this game. 2 hours later, you're relaxed. You know, it was pretty mindless, stressless game experience, which they went and completely ruined with the addition of combat. But so it'll be mindless and it'll be like this stressless adventure, and then you go into the cave and you have to whack the crap out of giant ants. There's a little bit of a sort of weird comparison there. But what happens is, I've basically made it to the end of one season in a week and a half of playing it every day. Going well for me. Because, well, it's 30 days in a season. Mm-hmm. And to truly appreciate the game, I'm going to have to go through at least a full year. Because there's all these events and there's interactions with characters you have to build up. There's levels I'm going to have to get through. But the reality of the situation is, the game just doesn't lend itself to a review format. And that's being really, really trying because, you know, it's hard for a game like that to be fun when you say, all right, I need to get through 7 days of farming in this sitting. If I wanted to, I could make it take 7 seconds, but I wouldn't be doing the game justice. Mm-hmm. So instead it takes 3 hours, and that's just sort of the price I play with this game. That's not to say the game is bad, it's just it's hard to play this game with a deadline. So it's definitely got improvements over the Harvest Moon formula that I'm liking now that I've got more time into the game. So, you know, there's a lot of tedium in managing certain elements of the farm, like watering every crop. Well, if you've got 50 plants going, that's a pain in the ass. But some of the monsters you recruit, for example, you can... it depends on the monster, but some of them have skills. And one of the ones I've got waters my plants for me. That saves me a lot of time that I can spend doing other things and getting through the game faster. So there are some interesting innovations to be had over the normal formula. So, I mean, you can play this game like a straight Harvest Moon game, but you're probably not going to get maybe half of what they have laid out for you.
I can appreciate that. I mean, I reviewed whatever the first Harvest Moon was for GameCube, and I got it, I want to say, like, maybe 2 or 3 weeks before it came out, and even with that much lead time, I really, really struggled to get a review out in a timely fashion. In fact, my review probably came out a few days after the release date, just because I'd have to go check to make sure. But I just remember feeling like, you know, I'm enjoying this, but this kind of game is just, it's very hard to play in a review kind of way.
Yeah.
It's not like when I got Metroid Prime 2 Echoes and I blasted through it in 2 days.
Well, I think the best parallel I have to that, and although I hated the game, is Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, where
this is going to be good.
No, hold on. In this game, it takes forever to accomplish any fucking thing, and clearly they intended for you to put it down after a while, so you don't rip the top half of your DS off the bottom half. Except for the fact they don't put enough fucking save points in any of the dungeons to actually accomplish that mission, so instead you're stuck playing for 3.5 hours anyway. And there's like 66,000 floors of dungeon to get through. But playing this for review is almost the exact opposite of how that particular franchise is designed to be played. Which, you know, it is a casual game, but there's a certain level of planning and thought that goes into it.
Maybe you should just take your time with the review and, like, instead of trying to rush and get the review done as soon as possible, do something like where you blog about it every 2 or 3 days as you go through it.
Oh, shit,
and kind of explain.
I have an ant. It harvests my strawberries.
Okay, maybe that's not
end of blog post. By the way, best innovation in the Harvest Moon game is an ant that harvests strawberries. It's great.
There you go.
Makes my life so much easier.
So the turnip chick, is she making your babies?
No. I'm still working it. Still working it. I've got a few other.
She's playing hard to get.
Got a few other things in the fire, you know.
Oh, you're playing hard to get.
I'm not playing hard to get.
You're just playing.
I'm playing the field.
Player. All right.
So, that's going to wrap up New Business. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk about NPD sales and the 1 year anniversary of WiiWare. Hi everyone, we are back to talk about numbers. Numbers, numbers, numbers. The April NPDs came out just right before we started recording, and I don't think any of us have probably had time to fully digest this information, so maybe this will sound spontaneous, but it was overall a pretty bad month for gaming, and you would expect in April that sales would be, you know, probably not that great. It's not exactly the hottest part of the year for video game sales, but last year it kind of was the hottest part of the year, because we had Wii was still selling out every single month, and we had Smash Brothers Brawl, and
Mario Kart came out in April, and
Mario Kart was out.
Wii Fit was like week one of May, yeah. So I mean, yeah, lead in on that too.
It was totally crazy.
GTA, right?
That came out in March, didn't it?
That's right.
But I mean, I guess it still might have exerted a bump into April.
Oh,
as
yeah.
Well. So very, very different.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, it did.
If you take March and April together, yeah, this year, it's very, very, very different from last year's March and April.
Yeah. So the only really bright spot in the sales this month is DS, which sold 1.04 million units.
Now, is that both combined?
Yeah, that's combined. I think it's about 800,000 are accredited to the DSi.
That's nuts, really.
According to NOA, it is 827,000 DSIs in April, and an additional 215,000 DS Lites. I think the ratio for this month, May, will end up being a little different. I don't know if you guys noticed, but Nintendo sold a Mother's Day bundle.
They did,
which I seriously considered buying. I just really couldn't afford it for my mom. But that included a DS Lite, not a DSi.
Yeah, the green was
kind of interesting.
Not surprised that they put the DS Lite in there. You know, the whole idea of those bundles, I think, is just to move hardware. I don't think they care what hardware it moves.
Yeah, and you know, I don't necessarily think they're getting rid of stock of the Lite since it's a kind of a special color. But you know, mothers probably aren't the target demographic for the DSi, so it sort of makes sense. But at the same time, it's kind of funny they just a week or two before that launched a brand new version of this hardware,
and maybe that's part of the reason.
Yeah, well, it's early to be bundling things like that. They took quite some time to bundle anything with the DS. I think probably the Nintendogs.
Yeah, that was the first bundle.
With the chubby DS was like one
it was,
of the first
It was
ones.
That and immediately followed by the Mario Kart one.
Yeah, and that was, 2006? So,
yeah, I think so. And then the next one goes all the way to what? The Zelda bundle?
Yeah, Zelda and Nintendogs again with the DS Lite. Yes. So they don't like to bundle like with new hardware, basically. So yeah, if they were going to do a bundle, it probably wasn't going to be with the DSi, and it sold fine anyway.
Yeah.
I think that it was a good idea for them to put the DS Lite in there, because I feel like the DSi would have raised the price of the bundle, and it might have moved out
it's
of
true.
Mother's Day gift
territory. Yeah, that's
true. And Personal Trainer Cooking is definitely an excellent choice to bundle it with for moms. I think that's a great little software. So second place for the month was Wii, definitely the top-selling home console of the month with 340,000. And still, it's less than half of 1 year ago sales. But like, you know, as we said, there was a lot of big software.
There's been supply in the market now for, 6 months or so?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, since Christmas, I would say, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think by now, people who want one have one.
That's part of it, could be. And, you know, maybe they need to do some things to make more people
like
want
a price
one
drop, maybe?
Who didn't want one before.
I don't think we're there yet.
I think we're more likely to see a bundle before we see a price drop.
We're what, 2 years in now?
Well, two and a half.
Two and a half, yeah, you're right. I mean, historically, this is close to when they do it.
Well, yeah, it did. GameCube had a pretty big price drop in less than 2 years.
This was outpacing PS2's install base rates, you know. I mean, the game's totally different.
Right.
And it started from a lower, you know, it didn't start from a really high point, although it's starting to look pretty high compared
to Yeah, I mean, you compare it to the 360, which is dropping. Yeah.
They didn't really have anything that you would think would drive hardware this month, certainly. Although, again, now that you've got to a point where, you know, Mario's out there, Zelda's out there, Smash Brothers, you know, and Mario Kart, and Wii Fit's, you know, obviously been doing the business. I mean, you wonder what's left that could really drive hardware. I mean, you know, I don't know if it's going to improve in future months. But like you said, April's not normally a big season.
No, but it does beg the question of what's left to really drive the hardware. I mean, the core franchises are already out.
I think Nintendo has to continue reaching out to groups of consumers that haven't fully adopted the Wii yet. And I think at the very top of their list
Amish
should be like hardcore gamers. So, you know, maybe Eddie.
Well,
I'm being dead serious. I sound facetious, but I'm being serious. Like, you know, obviously we're hardcore gamers and we have a Wii, but there are tons of hardcore gamers who don't have a Wii. And Nintendo needs to start giving them really totally legitimate, and not that they haven't already given them one or two, but they need to give them more reasons because hardcore gamers need a library of games that they want before they'll. I mean, you know, there are at least 5 games for PS3 that I would buy if I got a PS3 tomorrow, and still that's not enough to make me go out and get one. So I have to have a pretty compelling reason before I put out a lot of money on a new system. Because for one thing, I don't have time. I've already got 2 consoles and a DS and a PC. Okay, well, speaking of things that are driving hardware sales, we also have the top 10 software for April. And oldies but goodies, I guess, would be the theme here. You know, Wii Fit is the number one selling game of the month. Actually sold more Wii Fits than they did Wii.
Interesting, isn't it?
That's crazy.
You know,
there is an uptake of the... we always kind of postulate there's a lot of people that buy the two together, that they're buying Wii for Wii Fit. That kind of suggests more people... You know, who do already have them, you know, are still picking Wii Fit up in a sort of steady stream as well as the new adopters. Yeah.
Well, I think they're really getting these people who are like, well, I will get that Wii Fit game eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it's a bit more available, like,
exactly.
Because it has been so scarce.
And the thing is, you know, they won't necessarily go out and pick it up, but they will pick it up at some point because they're always thinking about it.
Right.
Yeah.
And some people get tax rebates in April. All right. So Wii Fit actually bested Pokemon Platinum, which came out in April, actually sold under 500,000 units with 433K. And I think this is a pretty underwhelming performance for a Pokemon game. I mean, it came out pretty late in the month, but
yeah,
if you look at, for instance, Pearl and Diamond,
there is a sort of fundamental difference.
This is that third version. Yeah, that third version never does as well as the other two.
I agree, but it's not doing as well as Crystal did, or whatever the fucking thing was for Advance. Emerald.
Yeah.
It hasn't done, so far, it hasn't done as well as either
of those. I
think
Emerald was marketed a lot more heavily than this particular game has been. Because I remember there being tons of commercials for Emerald.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only seen a handful for this.
Well, it just kind of makes me wonder if maybe consumers are kind of either wising up or just plain getting tired of these.
Well, considering how Diamond and Pearl
rehashes.
Did.
Well, but Diamond and Pearl were new games.
Yeah.
I mean, I bought Diamond, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, yeah. Look, I think when Heart Gold and Soul Silver comes out, you'll see some absurd sales numbers again.
Maybe. I just have a feeling that the performance so far of Platinum bodes ill for the remakes of Gold and Silver. I really do, because I think maybe we're getting to the point, you know, 11 years after Pokemon debuted in America, where people are kind of tired of these constant re-releases and remakes.
Well, see,
I think
what's going to happen with those games, though, and I mentioned it to somebody, it might have been here, is that you're going to have a generation who never played those games.
You already have. I mean, you know, it's been 10 years. I mean, there's been a bunch of new kids indoctrinated into Pokemon at this point. I would hesitate to read too much into, like, a week's worth of sales for the third iteration.
I still think that's pretty good numbers for this time of year.
I'm sure it'll appear again next time, but...
Yeah, mm-hmm. but you know,
forever.
I mean, that's the challenge for Nintendo is always going to be, like, you know, to make sure that new generations of fans, you know, do come into the fold, because people are always going to leave.
What's going to happen, like, two versions down the road?
And the point is, if you do get new generations of kids involved, well, then you don't really have to worry so much about the game being the same, because they haven't played
it. Or even
before.
A re-release. Yeah. I mean, because you can re-release and say, look, it's a new game!
So that's the trick, and I suppose the kind of... I guess it's pop culture sort of resonance is not quite as high as it used to be, but it's still going on. Like cartoons and all
yeah,
the
there's still
media.
Movies coming out, even though they're direct
on, DVD.
Well, yeah, but they're still into theaters in Japan, so they're coming out in DVD in the US, and they're still selling relatively well.
Well, speaking of things that are still selling relatively well, Mario Kart Wii Play, New Super Mario Brothers, and Mario Kart DS also all
Mario
in the
Brothers
top 10
and
this
Mario
week.
That was interesting. In the case of New Super Mario Brothers and Mario Kart DS, we've seen them hovering around the top 20 quite a lot, you know, but usually in that lower half, whereas you see they got bumped up into, like, what, 7th or 8th this time?
Yeah.
And that suggests, you know, there was a boost associated with the boost that came from the DSi, which therefore
probably
suggests that the DS, there was quite a number of people buying the DSi that hadn't owned a DS previously at all, because otherwise you assume they wouldn't be buying these games, because they probably would have already bought
them.
That's true.
I have a feeling it was a lot of people who handed down their DS Lite or DS Fat to someone else, and then maybe that person bought Mario.
Well, there's that too, in terms of you've got a new user of the DS, so you still
need
to buy
it. It doesn't necessarily mean that brand new people are buying DSi as their first.
Yeah, but
DS
you've got
system.
Now you've but you've got more people playing because they've inherited.
Oh, sure.
So you've got more people to buy games. Yeah, no, that works
right.
too. Definitely, that's another probably another route by which these sales for these that are always selling well in the background because DS as hardware is always selling well.
Do we have a lifetime to date for New Super Mario Brothers and Mario Kart?
I was just about to ask the same thing.
Yeah, I'm curious.
I'm really
not
curious
hand,
as to how it is.
I mean, I know, for instance, I mean, Mario Kart Wii has already sold 15 million copies worldwide. So DS...
That is absurd, because that game does not deserve to sell 15 million copies.
And Mario Kart DS was a massive hit in the beginning, so, I mean, this longevity, it can only be...
So the numbers on that must be huge. I mean, they're really, really
massive. Let me observe here that two games that are not on the top 10 are Excitebots
nice.
And Rhythm Heaven.
Nice.
Both first-party Nintendo titles released in April.
Excitebots doesn't surprise me at all. One, because it's just I don't think Nintendo pushed it that hard, and in this
uh-oh.
All this.
Well, that's the thing. I think they're promoting their catalog titles more than their new titles.
But what I would draw contrast with Rhythm Heaven, which came out earlier in the month, and they did push it hard because they had Beyonce marketing it or whatever, which is such a head trip when you think of this little Japanese game in 2006, when it finally. Comes to the West, you've got Beyonce promoting
it. I watched that video so many times.
It's very, very strange. But you see what I mean? When you think of it that way, that's surprising that it didn't quite make it.
I mean, my concern is that these evergreen titles may be finding success at the expense of the actual new software that Nintendo's releasing.
It's in terms of being in the top 10, well, yes, because only so many 10 can be in the top 10. But I think the point is these games will sell to people over a period of time, whereas with the after they get their system. Whereas, of course, New Super Mario Bros. And Mario Kart DS and all, they seem to be the choice for people when they get their system. So...
Yeah.
I think what you'll see is that it will continue to sell. We're not going. It's a bit like the GTA thing. It's like, oh god, it didn't penetrate the top. Well, that's it. The whole shooting match is over. It's like that. Rhythm Heaven's going to stick around. It may not ever be. It's never quite going to be the touchstone of something like a new Super Mario Bros. Or Mario Kart that everyone gets with their system. But a significant number of people will get it sometime after that.
Yeah,
and it'll keep going.
As you say, Greg, it had the entire month. It had Beyonce and Nintendo very, very purposefully tied the release of Rhythm Heaven in with the DSi
with
launch,
the DSi,
even though
yeah.
they didn't have anything to do with each other, and it still didn't sell 90,000 copies.
It is a little. I think it
Nintendo.
Is somewhat surprising.
I think it is.
But I would still anticipate it will be one of these things that will sort of have some traction, because the fact of the
I'm
matter
sure
is,
will.
Look at Professor Layton. Recently we discovered that once they did the push with was it Lisa Kudrow and all this in America.
Yeah, but that's they marketed that after the launch, not at the beginning. And that's why it did poorly at the beginning.
Well, they will probably keep marketing Rhythm Heaven because they see it probably as something that has the potential to keep selling if they give it the chance. And with Layton, you saw that, in fact, it actually exceeded its first month sales a year later. And, I'm not sure whether Rhythm Heaven could quite manage that because, like you said, it wouldn't be quite such an aggressive remarketing. But... it could still do something vaguely similar. I just think it's with these titles that come, the fact is, when you think about it, how many games that come out for the DS actually that aren't these touchstone games like a Pokemon or a Mario actually do get in the top 10? Not many, because it's just too dominated by those titles and then the big ticket items for the HD consoles and so forth. But are you going to say, well, no games sell particularly well on the DS apart from those? Of course not.
No.
Developers wouldn't be making tons of games for it if they didn't. So clearly they succeed in this somewhat quieter way.
Yeah, I mean, it's so top-heavy that... it just looks, it's funny.
Yeah,
I'm
not arguing with what you guys are saying. All I'm saying is Rhythm Heaven had everything in its favor.
It did.
Yeah,
that's absolutely.
And it still didn't sell more than 90,000. It probably sold
definitely
quite a bit less.
A notable underperformance.
I think so.
All of these Nintendo consoles, it almost seems like because the audience that is not maybe as video game savvy as, like, say, we are, it takes them a while to discover games. Like, maybe somebody they know buys it, and then they hear about it, and maybe a couple months down the line, so it's tougher to predict.
Yeah, absolutely. It's more word of mouth, and it's more like, and also just like in quantity terms, well, it's the rate at which they buy games will be slower than for the average person that owns a 360. They're not going to go out as they buy the system, they might buy one or two games with it, and then it's not going to be right, I will buy two games a month hereafter.
Yeah.
You know, that's not generally the consumer they're selling to at this point.
All right, well, the only other really notable thing about the top 10, and then we'll move on from MPDs, but I do think it's interesting that at number 9 we have Guitar Hero Aerosmith, not Metallica, which was actually released in April.
Although I did hear there was a stat that if you combined all the SKUs of Metallica, it was actually the third biggest selling game of the month.
Third?
Whoa. Yeah. And Aerosmith would have been four if you combined all the SKUs of that.
That's crazy.
Well, definitely the reason Aerosmith is up here at all is that it was massively discounted. A lot of places you could get it for $10.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, if you're in the market for a few more tracks for Guitar Hero, you might want to be on the lookout.
Yeah, which people kind of thought it should be in the first place. Yeah. It's just like a $10 download.
Exactly.
It's become a track pack.
It finally found its market.
Yeah, found the sweet spot on pricing.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's all for NPDs, and now we're going to move on into a bit of WiiWare discussion, and this is brought on by the fact that this past week was the one-year anniversary of the WiiWare platform launching for North America. And, you know, Nintendo, it's funny, the anniversary actually hit on Wednesday, I want to say, Tuesday or Wednesday. And, you know, not the day that they release new games for the service. To celebrate the 1 year anniversary this week, we got Family Pirate Party, which is a Japanese party game that IGN described as Mario Party without the mini games, if you can imagine that.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So, and of course, no online. So, anyway, not exactly a great way to celebrate, but Nintendo did send out a press release. At least
they could do
that. Just basically saying, hey, did you know it's the 1 year anniversary? They gave a list of like some of the best games for the system, or at least the ones that they want to promote.
Yeah.
Because they included Dr. Mario, which certainly is not one of the best games, but they just said, these are the games that, in other words, they had a great opportunity to like reduce the price on a couple of these maybe, or do something to get us excited. And I mean,
no. they just reminded you that certain games exist and a few that will be coming out somewhat soon.
Hey, this game still exists. Go download
it. Yeah, it does. There were some interesting choices in there, like Lit.
How much did it cost WayForward to get that?
Well,
I'm
not under
release?
The impression that it's been a big, you know, success on Wii. I'm not saying it flopped, but I wasn't under the impression that it sold really well on WiiWare. So
I think it flopped. Actually, I think that's
really
fair to say.
You think so?
From what I've heard on IGN's podcast, they had a letter. Someone asked about this, and you know, Mark Bozon, he sort of worked on the part of the game, I guess, which is a massive ethical quandary in the first place, but you know, they were kind of asking, can you give us an idea of how well Lit did? And he kind of didn't want to say anything, but then Matt said, you know, like a lot of WiiWare games are selling less than 1500 copies, and kind of, you know, left us to make the connection there. So I don't think Lit has been blazing up the charts on WiiWare, so that was kind of an odd choice. I mean, Lit is a game that I would kind of like to play at some point, but just haven't gotten around to it, and the reviews were a little too negative. So anyway, I kind of wanted to have a little discussion here about WiiWare and just, you know, reflect on the past year. I guess it's been a bit less than a year for you, Greg.
No, it was pretty much the same in America and Europe, I want to say. It was Japan that really got it first. Like, there was a significant lead in between them and
they
us.
Didn't have much to show for it.
No,
but,
well, they do now, but before...
Yeah, well, you know, it was a big week for... In addition to Contra Rebirth, they got all three art-style WiiWare games
fucking
at once.
Hell.
Whoa. That's crazy. So, you know, general comments, do you think it's been a good year for WiiWare?
Eh.
Mm, it depends. It depends in what sense, really.
Enthusiasm,
I mean,
there.
Yeah. I think the best way, the most successful way that it's probably been, I think, is giving you stuff that you weren't necessarily, like, you didn't know you wanted, if you know what I mean. Like something with, something like A World of Goo. You know, I'm not sure. I was thinking, God, I really do WiiWare. I really hope they do a physics-based puzzle game that's really great, or all that. But, you know, when you play it, it doesn't, you know, you are still thrilled to have it because it's so good. Whereas, yeah, you know, if you were dreaming about Nintendo IP-led games and, or, you know, a lot of this sort of thing, well, then that didn't happen. So, sort of.
Well,
you,
Pokemon,
you know,
Ranch.
that is still the best WiiWare game to date.
So yeah, I mean, it delivered more on that end, and for a lot, I mean, I played Orbient before as Orbital, so I knew it was great. But for a lot of people, they wouldn't have known that they wanted, you know, this sort of, you know, physics space game either. But, you know, they download it and it's great. So I think that's where it's been successful in terms of the games that, you know, you imagine, like, that you could be on WiiWare, maybe didn't quite live up to that quite as well. I mean, there are examples, like, first and foremost in my mind, Mega Man 9. That's a game that, you know, people would have thought, hey, yeah, why don't you just do a sort of new old school game, you know, and that's what they did, and it's really good for that.
Yeah, it just seems to be a lot more boutique than I thought it would be. Like, a lot of obscure games, like, different kinds of genres.
That's what I thought.
I mean, like, you would think that it would be kind of, you know, straightforward. You would get a couple of, you know, heavy hitter Nintendo games to kind of maybe, like, I mean, there really has there been a killer app? I don't really think there has. I mean,
not like, it's like I said, with something like a big, because you would normally think of a big IP or something.
Yeah,
like that has an app. But I mean, World of Goo is probably the closest thing in many respects, because
killer app is a funny term when talking about this, because it's not like you have to buy hardware in order to use WiiWare, but I mean, you know, not extra hardware. But at the same time, I think a killer app might be defined as something that would make average Joe or Jane, you know, connect to the internet and actually download something when they normally wouldn't.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I think, yeah, it is really lacking a killer app. It's lacking something that makes the average Wii owner say, I want to go over and see what's on WiiWare. And, you know, I kind of want to go over and download something, because I don't think that's really happening.
I just feel like everything's been kind of low key.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I think probably the biggest, the most hyped kind of WiiWare release is going to be the new Final Fantasy IV, The After Years. I mean, that's really the first kind of game where I've seen it actually...
That's a big title.
Yeah, actually hyped. It's a big title, big name, and it's actually hyped.
Aren't they advertising it in magazines?
Yes,
they are.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty unheard
of for a
WiiWare game.
Which is
for
WiiWare. Yeah, that hasn't happened.
No, you know what's unheard of for WiiWare? They have a fucking release date before it comes out.
That's exactly my point.
That
is, I mean,
that's uncommon also.
They know when their game is going to come out.
Yeah.
That must be
interesting
liberating
timing.
For them.
It's like June 1st, so that's going to be like as E3 begins.
It is, yes. So, which means no one's going to be around to review it. Isn't that wonderful?
Awesome.
Maybe that's their plan. But you know, Square's actually really balls out for WiiWare.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah.
Although,
yeah, well, they were
while,
there.
But...
They were there at launch.
They were.
And
yes.
Sort of went.
And although I'm deeply disappointed with my life as a Dark Lord. It's just going to be another tower defense game.
What?
Really? Because I thought Crystal Defenders was.
They've already got Crystal.
I know.
Yes,
I know.
You're telling me it's a different tower defense.
It's
game
a different kind. It's basically the same kind of premise as I understand it.
Wow.
But
that's kind of crazy.
I know.
So, I mean, I think that there have definitely been a handful of very good games for WiiWare. I don't think I would call it a good year for the service as a whole, just because, you know, if you look past the top five games maybe for the system, it gets pretty bad from there on. I think the level of quality falls off pretty drastically after the first handful. And
it's the first maybe 10.
And moreover, you know, I mean, it's not like there are only, what, 80 games on WiiWare right now in North America. So there's not a huge library. So, you know, having five or six really good games is actually a pretty good percentage as libraries go of games. I think my issue is more that, you know, if they were launching a new platform and a year after it came out there was only one game a week, we'd probably be a little worried, you know, about
it'd be the N64.
Exactly.
actually, one game a week would have been good for the N64.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think the problem is that because WiiWare is not a hardware platform, as time goes on, we don't see the natural progression of, you know, a market developing, and it gets crowded, and then it gets thinner because there's too many games, and then, you know, the things rise to the top because they're the highest quality or they have the best license. And WiiWare is so strict, the distribution is so strictly controlled by Nintendo, and that's really my main problem with it, is just I don't like the way the service is handled. You know, the games aren't marketed very well, you don't know what's coming out, and then when it does, they don't really do very much to promote it, and then it's gone. So even with really good games, they don't have a whole lot of longevity in terms of the thought process.
Well, I mean,
of gamers.
The World of Goats kind of surprised me in terms of it always seems to be at the top of the chart that they have on the shop channel.
Yeah.
And apparently outside of Europe and North America as well. And I mean, obviously it has all the great reviews and everything, but It does surprise me a little bit, because some of those other games that are always around about the top are the ones that you might more naturally expect, like a Dr. Mario or, and with those you might think, well, that could be a new Wii user, you know, coming online, they haven't bought it yet, and then they're deciding to buy it. Whereas, you know, with World of Goo, you wouldn't necessarily think that would be the process with that. And yet it continues to do very well. So maybe it is just a testament to how positive everyone's thoughts of it as, not just in terms of the reviews, but maybe word of mouth as well.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's been exposed so much by so many people saying, this game is so good, you actually do have to search it out. It's the one game on that service that really has been exposed.
It won a ton of awards, you know, earlier this year, and I think there are probably a lot of people who own a Wii, but, you know, maybe they primarily play another system, and so they're not as in tune with what comes out on a weekly basis as guys like us are. And, you know, for them, World of Goo is very likely the only game they've ever downloaded, because they're on NeoGAF or wherever, and they keep reading about it. You know, people keep talking about it. So eventually, they actually go over and go to WiiWare, and they download that, and they play it, and they enjoy it. But they're not really a WiiWare consumer in the sense of following what's coming out or really browsing and shopping for additional titles. It's pure word of mouth, you know. That would be my guess, but I mean, from what we've heard, World of Goo has sold really well on WiiWare, so it's been a success for those guys, and very happy for them. I think in terms of, you know, WiiWare was supposed to be this thing for indie developers, and it's funny that, you know, some of the best games have come from actually pretty big companies, which I expected Nintendo to have some pretty good WiiWare games in the first year. Totally wrong there. They haven't got shit.
Just got skip stuff, really. And stuff they picked up from outside, like Maboshi.
Yeah.
There are zero first-party developed.
That's actually really amazing.
Yeah, they haven't, it was Eureka and all that. So, yeah, they haven't actually developed anything in-house.
That really is amazing.
It's strange because, you know, they say, well, you know, we want to give the focus to, you know, smaller developers, independent developers, but then you have, you know, guys coming out with My Life as a King, Final Fantasy, and Contra Rebirth, and Hudson's doing tons of WiiWare games, a lot of which aren't even worth mentioning.
Tetris Party. Bomberman, and big names, you know, as well. Not just like your big companies are big names. In terms of
Bomberman.
IPs.
Lots of stuff. Capcom's got Mega Man, and a lot of these are good games. I'm not complaining about it, but it hasn't turned into the kind of indie game showcase that we might have been led to believe it would be.
I think we might have been naive to believe that, because you have to think about what's going to sell to the average consumer. And it's going to be the things that have high production values, even in a system like this.
Or at least something that sort of somewhat infers that it might do,
or an established IP. Or something. I mean...
A brand or an IP. And then, as we said, with World of Goo being the notable exception to that, but, you know, it's just so... In terms of, you know, this is a game made by two people. But it's just I think it is so tied to just how good it is. I mean, the merit of it, and then of course all the positive press and word of mouth that creates. Yeah, that is something of a one off.
Well, and the odd thing is, it seems like the way the platform exists, at least for now, is not really all that hospitable to indie developers. I mean, they might be able to afford a development kit for $2,000 from Nintendo and actually get the game made. And they might even, after waiting for months and months and months, actually get the game onto the store. I mean, I know of a WiiWare game that was finished in late March, and we're still waiting for it to be released, and there's no telling when it'll pop up. Yeah. Developers don't know. They have no idea. They're just waiting. And, you know, they can't make any money until that comes out. In fact, they probably won't make any money until a long time after it comes out, if ever. Because of this quota system that Nintendo's got, where you have to sell a certain number of copies before you make anything. And, you know, they don't, as an independent developer, you don't really have a budget to market the game, most likely. So you don't have PR, you don't have advertising, and Nintendo's not exactly helping out with that either. So Nintendo's taking a pretty big cut out of the sales, and yet I'm not really sure what Nintendo is doing to deserve that, except do a bit of QA on it before they put it up on their system, and they write a paragraph in a press release. I'm not really impressed with how Nintendo is pushing these independent games, and as a result, it seems like it's, you know, Nintendo's created this platform that they're relying on independent developers to support, and yet it doesn't seem like all that great of a business decision at this point to do that.
I mean, you might get Nintendo Channel videos. Like, is that about as much of an extent as the, you know, like,
yeah,
if the developer cuts a little trailer?
And my guess is those videos are produced at the developer's expense.
I would have thought so.
Very likely.
Who knows how effective the Nintendo Channel is at marketing stuff, but I mean, it's the obvious complementarity of just like, well, you have to be online to go to the shop channel, you have to be online to use the Nintendo channel, so maybe it is effective, but we don't really know. And I suppose, as in terms of this issue of the developers knowing when it comes out, I mean, and this indie developers versus established ones, it seems like, you know, the case of, as we pointed out earlier with Final Fantasy IV, the after years, there's maybe a bit of preferential treatment going on there.
They have been given perhaps a
release window at their request.
Yeah, I mean, I always feel like I feel like Nintendo has just been very skeptical of the service, and I almost feel like they just kind of put it out there to sort of let independents assume that risk, because they aren't really sure if they can necessarily make money off of it right now.
Tentative and kind of experimental.
And also the fact, you know, the whole lack of storage makes it very difficult. The fact that, like,
well, at least that's over now.
But where
it would more meaningfully, you know, change the game is if we see them lift the cap a bit on the actual size of the games because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also the fact that really you don't see games out there. I mean, it's hard for people to sample the product, you know, before they buy it.
Is, the absence of demos is
an
issue.
No demos, which is actually, I think that's worse than anything. That's probably even worse than the storage solution, is a lack of demos.
Anyway, I guess we're being a little bit down on WiiWare as a service, but I think it has some serious problems, and the reason that I care is that I'm sure probably all of us agree that the system, the platform, has a lot of potential, and obviously we've seen that it can deliver some really good games, but it does feel like it could be delivering even more good games if it was just managed better, you know, I don't know, it just seems like it's two or three big decisions away from actually being like really, really, really cool, kind of like, Live Arcade on Xbox, which isn't, definitely not a perfect service, and it has evolved over time. I mean, this idea of there being a file size limit on the games, you know, that was a really hot topic a couple years ago with Live Arcade, and eventually Microsoft got the point, and they started to do something about it. Mm-hmm. So Nintendo, it's possible they could do that as well.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it. Whatever you think about the stuff that they're putting out on DSiWare, and, you know, this doesn't seem to be all that much to commend in terms of creative endeavor in many ways, but the fact is Nintendo have taken it upon themselves to populate that service with games.
Now, that's right. Yeah.
It may be as rudimentary as ripping bits out of old games and putting it up for $2, but they're doing it. They've never felt the need to do that with WiiWare. And that's what interests me about where DSiWare could go in the future versus WiiWare. Could DSiWare becomes a more of a Nintendo-led success, that have a sort of feedback effect on WiiWare?
could.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, as of yet, there still really aren't any meaningful connections between DSi and Wii, although there should be. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, especially with the cameras and everything. I guess that's another argument, but I feel like Nintendo kind of dropped the ball on connecting those two systems in a really clever way. Because there's the capability is there.
There's an interesting example with that made in Mii in Japan, isn't there? Where obviously the whole point of the game is to make your own micro games, but you can download something in WiiWare to play other people's micro games, even if you don't have the game. So. That's an interesting idea, maybe, that, you know, WiiWare could actually be host to more of these kind of DS interacting things in the future.
Yeah. So anyway, enough about the service itself. Let's talk about some WiiWare games. So I asked each of us to pick out our favorite top three WiiWare games, and then maybe include an honorable mention or kind of a sleeper game, sleeper choice, sleeper hit, that we kind of want to highlight here as something that most people probably haven't played or maybe haven't really considered that. But, you know, we think that it's really cool and worth checking out. So I will let... I don't know. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Bueller first?
Bueller? Okay.
I'll go first.
I'll go first.
Yeah, my top three, well, I mean, Dead or Not World of Goo. You know,
you can't say it three times.
If you want to exclude that, go ahead.
I'll exclude World of Goo because I think it's the easy choice. I mean, it's one of the best games out there, but... I think, I don't know if this was necessarily the top three in terms of, you know, the kind of best three aside from World of Goo, but just three very, very good ones are, Tetris Party. I was very impressed by that. Bomberman Blast and also Onslaught was also a nice surprise.
Which is all from Hudson.
Yeah. John is a Hudson plant.
I think it just goes to show how many Hudson games there are out there.
Yeah, they've been very much more proactive than anyone else.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, well, the thing is with Onslaught, I mean, it was very, I mean, it came kind of completely out of left field. I mean, if you would have told me that somebody was making a first-person shooter for WiiWare, and not only that, but that it was going to come from Hudson.
I would have called them a lying bastard.
I would have called them a lying bastard, absolutely. And, you know, yeah. I mean, it's probably closer to an on-rail shooter more than it is, you know, a typical first-person shooter.
So it's an FPS ORS.
Yes. It's a new genre unto itself.
It's just like, a shooting gallery kind of gameplay.
Kind of, really, yeah. I mean,
it's a guided first-person adventure.
With guns and shooting.
Pretty much. Let me write that down for marketing.
Yeah, Hudson, definitely. I mean, we saw that they, until... They kind of cooled on the Virtual Console a bit, but they in general, the whole downloadable space on Wii, they've been like the big cheerleaders for it, haven't they, with all the Virtual Console stuff. And then WiiWare from the start with, like, what was it, Star Soldier R?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They're just big on downloadable games because they're cheap.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised, John, that you mentioned Tetris Party, because I have Tetris Party, and I think it's very well put together, but it's totally boring. I mean, it is.
It's pretty
just
vanilla.
Tetris.
Yeah, I mean, for what it is,
really,
I think it's pretty
really
good.
Boring. Like I when I play it, I enjoy it, but like I hardly ever play it. I see it there on the SD card menu, and I'm like, it's surrounded by all these other games that are so much more colorful and interesting and creative, you know. And I very rarely can bring myself to actually click on it and start up a game of Tetris Party. It's, I don't know. And it's also something I would never actually play at a party because it's just Tetris.
Yeah.
I can't imagine bringing people over to my house to play Tetris.
If the game has the word party in it and you wouldn't play it in a party setting, that's just terrible. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah.
I was more impressed with just how much they crammed into it. I mean, it was much more...
For sure.
Like,
they
definitely didn't cheap out on it in terms of its you know, feature set, so that's why I like that.
True dat, dog.
And Bomberman Blast, it's Bomberman, man. I mean...
It's a blast.
Was it 8-player online Bomberman where you can have, what, 4 people, like, locally, all go online together and then... play against another 4 people.
That's nice.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds pretty much like what you'd want. Yeah, because obviously you've got other Bomberman games on the VC, So, you know, if you have it with a WiiWare, that's where you want them to go, and it's and they did that. So you can't complain. They pretty much delivered what you'd want.
Yeah, exactly.
I really should get that one. I like Bomberman too.
It is really good.
I really should get it. All right, James, why don't you go next?
Oh, thanks. So I don't have a sleeper, unfortunately. But
okay, that's fine.
Obviously, My Life as a King is a game that I spent a bajillion hours in. Without the DLC,
you really truly like it, huh?
I really like that game. I honestly feel like it got a bad rap, but it's a very solid title.
All right.
I obviously Mega Man 9, which I was shocked that John didn't mention.
Well, you know, he's played that game a lot of times before, James. Oh. So you know, at some point, you just have to move past it.
And you know, for the third game, there's a few it could be. So maybe Star Soldier R.
Really. I'm kind of shocked to hear anybody.
Well, for what
even
it is, I mean, it's a Score Attack game, and how many thousands of hours do you think I've spent on Score Attack games?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say probably a year of my life. So it's not really that. And you have to understand, I don't have a lot of WiiWare games either.
Okay, but I mean, do you think Star Soldier R is like a good value?
No, it's not.
No, it's one of the big things with it is that they have like the Star Soldier games on the VC have that mode in it.
They do,
the Score Attack bit. So. Again, I'm not sure. You know, it has got fancier graphics.
It's not a good value, but I've had fun playing it. I think is the point.
Yeah. So.
In fact, I would not suggest it to go buy it. I wouldn't. But I still had fun with it. Now, I think if this whole segment goes without mentioning Major League Eating the Game, it would be
that's your dark horse.
Oh God!
Remember, I just like to point out that game because how many thousands of press releases did we get emailed about that game before it came out?
Every day.
Yeah.
I got to get it to Michael Myers PR. They pimped the shit out of that Wii.
It was freaking bizarre. It was like every day there was another press release. I was like,
they earned their pay on that one. Let me tell you.
Yeah, I mean they went through like every single way you could eat or something like that. Like they had like a series of press releases one after the other.
Well, there's your solution to any indie developers who are worried about marketing their game. Call up Michael Myers and see if you can afford his rates. Because
no, but Mastiff, the worst part
he'll get the word out.
Mastiff isn't an indie developer. They're just a bad developer.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not talk about Major League Eating anymore, all right. Please.
And of course, honorable mention to our friend Kokuto.
Yeah. In
all his endeavors.
So I'll go next. My top three would definitely be World of Goo, and Orbient, which is a game that I really truly love, and I think it's just about the best $6 you can spend at WiiWare. And it's unique. I mean, there's just nothing else like it. Orbient is a pretty magical little game. It's ugly, it's really fun and really ingenious. And for my third, I'd have to go with something pretty recent. I think BitTrip Beat is a pretty awesome package. And I have a few little issues with it. I mean, it is probably too hard, and I wish the three levels were broken up into smaller chunks because each one's about 15 minutes of not blinking, which is kind of physically uncomfortable. but it is. I mean, the fact that you don't want to blink because you're so into it really says it all. I mean, it is a very intense, really absorbing, awesome game. I mean, when you get to the so-called bosses of each level, you'll start to realize just how brilliant it really is. Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to the other BitTrip games. That one really caught me by surprise. When I saw the good reviews, I downloaded it, and I was not disappointed at all with it. I think it's really good. And as far as sleeper games, I guess I would mention two. Tokitori is a really good like kind of platform puzzle game. I guess it's a bit like The Lost Vikings or something in that vein.
But is it kind of like sort of DK94 a bit as well?
I guess so. It's more slower paced than that. But yeah, I mean, it is a puzzle game in which the way you play through the puzzle is to control a character and move him around and use certain items. I mean, it's a kind of game that doesn't get made very often, and Tokitori does it really well. And the puzzles are evil. I mean, they are really, really good puzzles. I can't even... It's funny because at first it looks like it's going to be a really short game. It looks like there aren't many levels to it. But like as you get to the deeper ones, you're like, oh my god, they get so brutal. And you're just, it's a huge event when you pass a level at all. And then when you finally beat the game, you find out that that's only the first half. Now you get to play the extra evil versions of everything that you just played, in which the puzzles are twice as difficult. So, my friend Kevin, he's really good at that kind of game, and he got to the latter half, and he called me over one night and was like, hey, can you take a look at a couple of these puzzles, because I want to get a fresh set of eyes on them. And I looked at them, and I was like, dude, what the fuck is going on? It's pretty crazy. So if you're really into puzzle games, that's a really cool one to get. And the other one I would say is Groovin' Blocks, which is a game that I've championed before, but I booted it up yesterday and ended up playing it for about an hour. And I just, once again, was so impressed by it. The music is awesome. There's like 10 or 12 songs to play through. I mean, it's a pretty amazing soundtrack for a WiiWare game. I don't know how they crammed all that in there. But the graphics are very nice. The game design is just really polished. I mean, it wouldn't be a stretch to just throw this on a disc and sell it. I mean, it would be more substantial than some Wii games that are sold on disc. I mean, it really, especially if you just maybe doubled the number of songs, this would totally fly as a disc game, and it would get good reviews. Like, it is that well done, it's that polished. I think if you're interested in a Tetris kind of game, but you don't want just plain vanilla Tetris, which is what you'll get with Tetris Party, Groovin' Blocks is a similar, you know, it's in the same vein, but it's much more refreshing, interesting take on the falling blocks kind of thing. All right, Greg, you're the last one.
Yeah, well, I mean, first thing I'd like to say is if I didn't have it on GBA, Orbium would be in there, because, you know, I have bought it, but it's so good. I mean, it really must be one of the best games on WiiWare, just from my experience with GBA, because it is excellent. And I may still buy it on WiiWare, actually, just because I think there are a few extra levels.
New levels.
Or something, so.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'd be interested to play that. World of Goo has to be in there, because I think it's excellent, and like I said, it's just it's very unique. And Mega Man 9 is kind of the flip side of that for me, because that's the kind of game that you would imagine you want, and
it's the kind of game you'd imagine being on Virtual Console.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it is really very thoughtfully, you know, put together. It doesn't feel like something like, I mean, I would have to say, just from my experience so far, I would put Contra Rebirth in my top three. But the difference is that feels much more like distinctly a new WiiWare game, in the sense that it's a bit more sort of frivolous. It doesn't feel like it would have been a game at the time. Whereas Mega Man 9 really does. Yeah, you know, the way it's put together, and that's that kind of attention to detail that's in there, and I just think I played 2 and 3 just after Mega Man 9, and I really think it stacks up very well with those.
Yeah,
I mean, I wouldn't like to pick a favorite, but I mean, it's right there, and that is a high standard. So
yeah,
that is wonderful.
I'm glad say that. Actually, that's pretty cool. And you'd never played 2 and 3 before, right?
The 9 was the first one I played, and then once I got my Japanese Wii, so I could play 2 and 3, you know, as they're supposed to be played in the 60 hertz and all that. You know, I got them straight away and played them, and they're both fantastic. And it, you know, when you think of it for me backwards, you know, Mega Man 9 does such a great job of channeling those, and Rebirth 2, I really like. I think it's a lot of fun, and yeah, I look forward to that coming out with the West. Everyone else could enjoy it, but for the more sleepery kind of ones, Cubello for me would definitely qualify, because it's not very substantive, but it's kind of just relaxing, kind of enjoyable. You know, it's not the most sort of rigorously thought out game. It has these weird little random elements to it and all this sort of stuff, but it's just kind of in to me, it's sort of intrinsically fun in a way, and that you know, for 600 points, I think it's worth it. And, you know, it does have the vocoder thing. And, you know, it's pretty amazing. It would not exist in another foot. You know, we said about Groovin' Blocks in terms of like, that could be a disc game. Well, Cubello absolutely couldn't be, But that's what's kind of cool about it in a way, not so much from a value proposition point of view, but from the point of view of, you know, this is a kind of experience that is fun that you just wouldn't be getting if you didn't have WiiWare, if you didn't have downloadable games in this fashion. So I think that's what makes it a good sort of sleeper choice for the service, and there's probably more like that. And then the only other thing I haven't downloaded many, I'm kind of in the same boat as James, although I probably will now, more so now that the storage thing is not an issue anymore.
Yeah.
Although the Japanese virtual console kind of just devours my points. there's so much stuff.
You'll catch up eventually.
Yeah, once I've downloaded every shoot 'em up ever made. I will then get on to actual new games. But you know, Alien Crush Returns is another one of these revival type games, which is actually quite different from the original, you know, because that was more about playing on one giant table, whereas this is more about playing on a bunch of little ones. So it's not it's not that much of a sort of observed recreation, but it's still pretty decent sort of video pinball. Yeah, I wouldn't complain about it. Yeah, and it's got some interesting little twists with like these different sort of effects you can put on the ball. And I think they actually released more later, sort of like as not really, I guess you could call it DLC. They just kind of did sort of silently update with new balls where you could add like new powers and stuff. So it's kind of cool.
I was going to say, like, don't they have like DLC pinball boards?
No, I don't think they ever did anything
like
that major. But
I thought that was the plan.
Because that would have been, I guess that would have been like pay content, but I don't think that ever happened. Whereas these new balls, they just kind of showed up. Like I just started playing it one day and it's like, oh, right, there's more options for like what I can do with the ball. It's, you know, it's kind of a neat little thing.
That sounds like one I really need to catch up with. And I mean, I have Mega Man 9, but I haven't played it in ages, and I never finished it. So that's
really because
that
you know
yeah,
one
go
thing
back
I
to
think,
and play.
One thing I would say about that relative to the others, or obviously I haven't played the Wily stages in 3, so I can't. But relative to 2, the Wily stages are way better in my opinion. The Wily stages in 2 are kind of strange.
Yeah, they're like experimental.
They're much more rigorously thought out in Mega Man 9, and just kind of make more sense and make some cool use of the powers in terms of like, you know, puzzles like when you put the cement into the lava so you can climb up it and things like that. And
oh yeah,
and definitely, as you say, with Mega Man, it has this counterintuitive thing where it gets easier as it goes on, but then the Wily levels bring it back into balance, so that's what's great about those.
Oh yeah, definitely one I want to go back to and play some more. All right, so those are our choices for WiiWare, and hopefully we've given some of you a few ideas. And if you have one or two that you really, really, really think that we should play and that your fellow listeners should check out, you can send us an email about that. We're not going to have listener mail this week because we're wrapping up the show, but I'm sure we'll get to it very soon. If not next week, then shortly after. So send your E3 predictions or thoughts on NPD sales or, you know, God knows what. Anyway, those emails would go to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and definitely look forward to always look forward to reading your emails as we get them in throughout the week. And with that, we're going to wrap up the show. Before we go, I do want to plug our sister podcast, Radio Trivia Podcast Edition. We've just had a very good episode posted recently. I can't really say what's on it because that would defeat the purpose, but it's some good shit.
You
can
say who's on it, at least.
Neil Ronahan is with TYP, and that's episode 51.
Yep.
Photograph memory strikes again.
Yeah, before that, episode 50 with James, our own James Jones, talking, and they cover Game Boy games on that one. So, yeah, a couple great episodes recently. Definitely check that out. It's free, and you can get it on iTunes or go to NintendoWorldReport.com and look for it there. And then, once again, just want to say thanks to Jason Ricci for letting us use his new album, Done with the Devil, for our new podcast music, and I hope everybody's appreciating it. Did get one comment from Insano Lord, who really liked it and said he bought the new album, so go you! I hope you're enjoying that, and I hope you won't be the last. So, with that, we will bid you adieu. Look forward next week to our pre-E3 coverage on Radio Free Nintendo. Bye, everybody.
Later.
So long. We'll be right back.
You know, you're growing about 70 strawberries every other day. You can hand some out to the ladies of town.
I knew this guy in high school, and one day I saw him. It was some kind of open house. There was some reason we were at school at night, you know. And I saw him there, and somebody was taking his picture, and he had these two girls, one on either side of him. They were nice looking girls. And
he gave him a turn up, didn't he?
You know, he walked away from these girls or whatever. And I saw him later without the girls, and I said, "Hey man, are both of those girls your girlfriend?" 'Cause that's how they were kind of behaving around him. He's like, "Yeah man, you know what that's called?" I said, "No, what?" He said, "Pimping." So, there you go, Johnny's anecdote.
That's right. Yeah, I'm playing the field.
Let me write that down.
Yeah. Bust that one out at parties and cocktails, John.
Pull that one out when you're out with the ladies.
Probably the wrong choice of words, James. Considering the subject.
Or maybe it's the exact right choice of words.
Possibly.